So I've told this story a couple of times, primarily on Facebook. I did make a video shortly after the occurrence, but there might be those of you who are first-time listeners who have not heard me talk about it. I was engaged in an activity on a Southwest Airlines flight from Portland to Sacramento this weekend, Sunday, to be specific, where a woman boarded the plane. Probably she was the second to the last person to board the plane. And clearly she was upset about something, I'm not certain what. And when she got on the plane and noticed that the front seat, middle seat, the front row middle seat was empty, she looked at me and the other woman who was sitting on the window and said something to the effect of, "Is the seat available?" In a very rude way. And both the woman sitting near the window and I had essentially just looked and did not respond because we were sort of taken by the way that she came onto the plane. The woman sitting in the window was an elderly woman from Klamath Falls, and she and I had already built a rapport, and we were talking about kind of where we were from and where we were traveling to. I think we'd probably been on the plane for about 10 minutes. After we didn't respond to her, she, I think somebody in the second row said, "You could probably sit there, but you're going to have to put your bag up on top." And she essentially ignored that person and was just standing there like looking for the flight attendant. So she asked the flight attendant in a very, again, rude way to provide some assistance with putting the bag up. And it's something to the effect of like, "I need you to put my bag up right now." And the flight attendant, who was also an African-American male, responded to her and said, unfortunately, I'm not allowed to do that. I cannot lift your bag." And she said, "Well, what are you going to do with it?" And he said, "I'm happy to check it. There might be, if we find a space, because you can't have it under your seat. If we find a space, I'm sure we can find somebody that would be willing to help if you're unable to." So they go on to the back. I'm not sure where she put her bag or how far back. But when she came back, disturbed by whatever she was disturbed about before she got on the plane, also having to put her bag up and not getting the response that she wanted from the flight attendant, she decided that she was going to target me and the woman that was sitting on the front row, primarily me, for not responding to her. So she is talking to herself, I guess, you know, saying, you know, "This person like is ignoring me," and I can't remember specifically what she was saying, but it was like, okay, I'm really not responding to her. So she finally sat down, you know, got comfortable, and I think she wanted me to know that she was unhappy. So she started like, you know, like trying to, you know, position herself in the middle seat, like moving her elbow into my kind of rib cage area. And I just ignored her for as long as I could. Shortly after that, she pulled out a book and she started to read it. And that apparently, from her perspective, required her to stretch out a little bit more. So she stretched out a little bit more, pulled out her highlighter, and started to highlight parts of the book that she wanted to highlight, apparently. But that required her elbow to be, for some strange reason, at the length of like my jawline. And she and her book and her highlighter and her elbow, the combination of all of that, like had gotten to the point where I had to politely ask her, ma'am, I believe that you know what you're doing. And I'm going to ask you, please do not put your book in my face. And she said something about, I can't even remember the specifics of what she said. I just said, please don't. 5 minutes later, I think maybe she was upset because I hadn't been responding. I said, ma'am, I'm going to tell you one more time. Please do not put your book in my face. And by this time, she had her highlighter out. And her highlighter, like, hit my jacket, like, and she, her book was, like, so close to my face. And I turned around and noticed that she was sticking her middle finger up at me on the other side of her book. So the first thing is, like, okay, this is getting crazy. I grabbed her book and I launched it because it had gotten so close to my face that, like, she was intentionally agitating me. The result of that was that the people around me were like, great, I'm really glad that you stood up to her, because her belligerence had spread across the flight. I mean, people were watching what she was doing. She was talking, like, to herself, quote unquote, under her breath, but loud enough so that people were like, I mean, even the flight attendant had, like, patted me on the back and said, hey, you know, it's gonna be okay. The woman on the other side of her and I had, like, she said something, she leaned over and said, luckily this is only a 1 hour flight, we'll get through it, don't worry. So after the book thing, a woman behind me was like, you know what, let's trade seats for a while. And, you know, then everybody can calm down. I said, oh yeah, I'm good with that. Now, I'm 6'4 and 310 some odd pounds. And so quite naturally, it was uncomfortable for me to sit on the second row. And so I got to the point where, I mean, I had built a rapport with the people in the second. We were all kind of talking about what was happening. And I was thinking, like, it doesn't make sense for me to move and be uncomfortable for the duration of this flight, just because of the behavior of this woman. So naturally, this situation has escalated, and I moved to the seat behind me for a while, take a break, build a rapport with those folks, and eventually move back to my seat. And just resolved to take a nap with the understanding that this woman would continue to pursue the way that she was. But in my heart, I just didn't want to back down, because I felt like a lot of times we back down because we don't, because we feel like we can't be victors in situations like this. But I really just wanted to prove the point that we don't have to back down and we don't have to take poor treatment from other individuals. When I got back to the seat, it was almost like she, like, bumped up her stuff a notch. I had kind of nodded off, and I woke up and realized that she, as soon as I woke up, I'd seen that she was pushing the button to call the flight attendant. So she calls the flight attendant and act like she's asking him a question, but decides she wants some privacy in asking the question. So she goes and talks to the flight attendant in private. Not certain what they talked about. She comes back to the seat, sits down, does her thing. Maybe like 5 or 6 minutes later, she rings the bell again and says that I'm cutting off her circulation, and I won't stop bothering her. So the flight attendant is like, are you cutting off her circulation? Like, no, I'm not. He asks. So then he leaves, and it's sort of like, ma'am, just relax. Like, the flight's almost over. She does it again, rings the bell, and says, I want to move forward with what we talked about. So he is like, okay. He goes, apparently, maybe he's reading, you know, what needs to happen next, he comes back and asks her for a written statement and passes her a piece of paper. He also asked me for a written statement, and I'm like, I don't have a written statement, but I'd be happy to write down my name because I haven't done anything wrong. So I write down my name in private so that she can see it because she doesn't deserve to know my name. And the flight lands about 10 or 15 minutes later. She goes back to grab her luggage, and I get off of the plane. As soon as I get off the plane, I see about 6 officers. Now, it could have been anywhere between 4 to 6 because it was difficult to tell. There was an African-American woman, and these people were from the county sheriff's office, and about 3 to 5 Caucasian older men. The African-American woman was sort of farther along. There were some people with wheelchairs and things, and they said something to the flight attendant. The flight attendant identified me as a person that he had apparently called about, and the African-American police officer or sheriff member summoned me and said, please follow me. So I'm following her. I'm not paying attention to what's happening behind me. I just know that there are a number of white male persons like that are apparently doing the same with her. The police officer takes me outside and asks out into the area, the what do you call that? In the airport. And she asked me what happened. I tell her what happened, and I'm just sort of showing her the photographs of what the woman was doing, sticking her middle finger at me, how close the book was to my face. And she's talking, and finally I kind of like turn around, and I see that about 6 to 10, because I can't remember specifically how many people were from the flight, namely the 3 people behind me, a couple of people on the other row, and some people on the third row, had stayed to talk to the number of white officers to tell them that, you know, this gentleman didn't do anything to her. She was agitating him. She came on the plane doing it. The woman who had taken, who I had traded seats with, she experienced the woman's behavior as well in the brief moment that she was sitting in the seat. And the female officer who was speaking to me asked the male officers, what did the woman say that he did? And their response was, she didn't say anything. She left quickly. And at that point, I'm like, well, why am I standing here? Like, what can I go? And they're like, oh, yeah, you can go. So I'm walking in. In the interim, like, people are giving me hugs and thanking me for standing up to her. And letting me know that if anything happened or they needed a witness, that they could contact me. A couple of people gave me their business cards. I mean, it was just like a really cool moment to see that people were willing to stay there and speak to me. But I think that at that point, that's sort of when the anger set in, because it's sort of like, what's the protocol for somebody accusing you of doing something and not being accountable or staying back to communicate specifically what it is that happened. So not only is the flight attendant a witness, but so are the people, the other passengers who stayed back and some that didn't stay back, but spoke to me at the baggage claim. But also you have the number of officers who got or were supposed to have gotten written statements saying that I was innocent and had not done anything. And in my communication, I decided to call the Southwest corporate office. And I asked them some of the same questions, like, what's your policy? What's your practice around pulling people off a plane to have a conversation with them about something that an accuser said? Like, what is the practice around that? And they told me that their practice was internal and proprietary and that they could share no information with me and that they were sorry that it happened. I asked them, what were the next steps? Considering the fact that I had submitted to them a formal complaint. And they said that that's all that they could tell me, is that it's proprietary and internal, and they're sorry that it happened to me. And that was very alarming, because you should be able to tell somebody, first of all, what should have happened is the flight attendant should have said, sir or ma'am or both of us or everybody, when a complaint is made against another customer, it is our practice, or we're required to contact the sheriff's office, and they meet the two persons or the two parties involved, and they ask you for a written statement. And at that time, after they have provide that written statement, they do an investigation or whatever it might be. There was no information. So my meeting this several officers was both alarming and just extremely uncomfortable. And as an African-American man, you can imagine that this is something that, you know, I'm accustomed to reading about and hearing about. And I was a passenger on the flight just like she was. I paid to be on there. I'm a Rapid Rewards member, all the above. And so it was just really alarming to not know what was happening, and then to learn that the person who is the accuser is completely unaccountable and there is no formal follow-up. So after that, I mean, of course, the result has been that over 3,000 people have forwarded my initial posts in my video. I think about 2,000 have shared it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of the platforms. I have heard only from Southwest via Twitter. Customer service. The first was that they only respond that I think the first response was that I would be added to some monthly log that upper management views. Like, they didn't communicate when upper management views it or how they view it. They just said that I would be communicated in some way, shape, or form. 24 hours later, there has been no communication. I shared an email with emails provided to me from another customer that experienced this, to the VP for customer service. Nothing. Have heard nothing. Finally, in a response today, I was told that these types of inquiries require investigation and doing research was the term that was used, and that they would be getting back to me as soon as possible. And so my question is, why didn't they say that on the phone? Why didn't they say that in their initial response, that there was going to be somebody who would be responding to me? And there are a lot of different issues. And in the process of trying to get the word out and trying to share with people my experience, like, I have gotten a lot of folks talking about the experience that they have had on Southwest and other flights and other airlines, but primarily Southwest, that have been unfavorable to them due to complaints being made and Southwest Airlines handling those complaints very poorly. So, first, there is this attempt to silence the victim or to not be responsive. And then there are, one of the things that I noticed, like, even in the people who supported me and came and gave me a hug or a high five or told me, you know, great job dealing with her, they identified her. I heard people saying that she was a prima donna. I heard people saying that she was a spoiled brat. Some people were using the B word. And for me, like, it was blatant between the interaction that she had with me and the interaction that she had with the flight attendant, that it was more than just, you know, she was upset and having a bad moment. Like, there were microaggressions that were apparent in the way that she was acting. There was implicit bias. There was this sort of, like, entitlement that she should be available and that I should move and that the police should be called and that the flight attendant should put her bag up. There was just all of these things that represented, and then the absence of accountability on her part after that she had made a complaint, quote unquote, you know, accusing me of whatever she accused me. I'm not even sure what she accused me of doing, aside from saying that I was cutting off her circulation, which is like, if I was cutting off your circulation, man, it seems to me that that would be something worth staying and talking to an officer about. And so the thing that, the reason why I'm really committed to talking about this and to continuing to have this dialogue is that one of the things I realize is that I'm a person who benefits from a lot of privilege because I am an educated African-American man with a platform. I think that there are a lot of people who are victims of this type of behavior that do not have a platform, that do not have a voice, that cannot speak for themselves. And to me, it feels like my obligation to be having that conversation because I have mentees who are young African-American men who want to fly and go places without the fear of being treated poorly by airlines and by other customers. I have nephews who I hope will have the same privilege of traveling that I do. And I think that the airline owes me an apology, but most importantly, if they don't give me an apology, they owe to every person who gets on the plane an explanation for what they will do in the event of a complaint. And from what I'm hearing, this is a regular, I mean, look at the news. You can't babysit kids while being Black. You can't be at a park while being Black. You can't go swimming without being Black. You can't. So all of this stuff, it's really difficult to separate, you know, in this Trump America, like the way that people are treated by systems and individuals and systems that empower individuals. It's really difficult to separate those things. And I think that we need to have a real conversation about this America is turning out to be because people are no longer responsible for being accountable for their behavior. And yes, I launched the woman's book. Yes, I didn't respond to her when she asked me if the seat was available. Yes, I wish I wouldn't have launched her book because that perhaps maybe would have made my concern more credible. But at the end of the day, like this woman, it wasn't about her book. It was really about the fact that she lives in a country that allows her to be who she is with no accountability. And she's off somewhere enjoying her life. And if I'm not mistaken, on her screensaver, there were 3 children. Like, whether they're her nieces or her nephews or her actual children, those are children that she has influence over. And so if that behavior is okay for her, imagine the influence that she's having on those children. And I think that this is the conversation that we need to have. So I'm not going to be quiet. I'm not going to stop talking about it. I'm not going to stop asking people to share it. If nobody else shares it, if nobody else supports me, which I'm thankful that so many people have supported me, but if nobody else does, I'm going to keep talking about it because it's not something that I did. Like, I don't have a criminal background. Like, I just made her uncomfortable. And was she uncomfortable because I'm big? Let's ask that question. Is she uncomfortable because I'm African American? Let's ask that question. Let's look at this deeper because all the people that were around agreed that there's an issue. And so many times, and I'm thankful for the people who stood around, but so many times there is nobody who stood around. And we have to pull out our phones to both protect ourselves and to validate our concerns. And like in this case, I didn't think about pulling out my phone. Because I didn't know what I was coming against. I didn't know I was going to go off the plane and there was going to be all those officers. Now, I'm going to add that the officers were very kind to me. Like, it wasn't like they treated me poorly. But I know that there are certainly circumstances when the officers are not kind to Black men. More often than not, I'm going to go out on a limb to say more often than not, this situation does not end well. And I'm fortunate that it ended well. I credit Jesus Christ because he is my savior And he brought peace to a situation that could have easily escalated based on her behavior. But I'm fortunate that he kept me in that moment and in those moments. But there are some people who do not have that peace, right? And they would have fell into this woman's hand and became a victim because they were being victimized. And we need to have that conversation. We need to talk about implicit bias. We need to talk about microaggressions. We need to talk about the experience of African-American men, both educated and uneducated, in the hood, in the corporate office, wherever it might be. We need to have that discussion, because when we don't have it, we make the assumption that everybody is okay. And the more we expose the Isabellas of this world, the more we bring light to the facts that people just do not care. They are empowered by these systems that make them feel that they do not have to be accountable. And anybody and everybody who shares this podcast, shares my post, you are helping to bring attention to the fact that this system is flawed and that we need to speak up. And the power in speaking up is that people will ask questions and they will know their rights. And those of us who have been victimized but also have privilege, and those of you who have just complete privilege, we need to stand up and be better allies for the folks that will come behind us. And we need to recognize that these little instances are not isolated. They are not isolated incidents. They are not things that are just happening to random people. Also, so that these conversations are productive and not just opportunities to tell stories, but I do think that stories have power, I think it's important to know some more recent activities that have been interactions between white women and black men in similar instances. There is De'Arion Toles, who, according to KMOV Channel 4, was returning home to his downtown St. Louis loft when Hillary Brook Mueller blocked him, refusing to let him pass. She followed him through the hallways, through the elevator, and when asked why she did it, she says because she was uncomfortable. And she later was removed from her job. But think about her intentions, because when I'm uncomfortable, I don't follow people. You know what I'm saying? Then there was a black man who was caring for two white children, who was questioned by the Georgia police after a woman reported him suspicious. And of course, a viral video of the accident was a part of this. This was Mr. Corey Lewis, the owner of a youth mentorship program. And when asked from the accuser why she decided to call the Georgia police, she said it was because she had a funny feeling. So there is being uncomfortable, and there is seeing a black man with white children and having a funny feeling and calling the police. Now, if you do not think that implicit bias and these are people who work somewhere, right? Think about it. These are people who go to the grocery store where we go to. They buy cars where we buy cars. They rent and buy homes and live in communities that we live in. They work where we work. And if they, in their personal life, exercise bias against black men around issues of safety and discomfort, imagine how that manifests in other environments. I might add that she probably would have the same experience in a church environment. So when we when I see a white woman with black kids or a white man with black kids, I don't say, ooh, I'm uncomfortable by that. Now, depending on the community that I'm in, it might be strange, but I don't have like a, what are they doing with him or what are they doing with her kind of mindset. So we suffer from that. That's the nature of our country. So the question is, what do we do? Where do we go from here? And I think it's really important for us to share these stories, to ask questions, to be allies for individuals who have experienced this negativity. But most importantly, I really think it's important for us to check our own biases, right? And to ask ourselves the question, like, where do I fall in this sort of continuum? Like, what would be my response to this? And, you know, even in hearing this, if it frustrates me, like, how am I responding? Because sometimes, like, being passive in our response to issues like this is a part of the problem. And I think we need to challenge that behavior when we are like, oh, well, you know, I think it's bad, but I'm not going to challenge it because it's none of my business. I think that if we're going to be a better country, we have to evaluate what's our business and what's not our business. Because a lot of times, you know, we can help other people, like those 6 to 10 people who stayed behind to advocate for me. Like, I appreciate their bravery and their concern, because it technically wasn't their business, but they seen and heard something that upset them to the point where they knew that they could be an ally for me. Martin Luther King said, he who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetuate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. And I leave that conversation, I leave this conversation with that quote. In fact, I'm going to read it again. He who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetuate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. So even in my case, sometimes in recognition of your privilege, you have to pull yourself out of the scenario so that you can advocate not just for yourself, but for those who will come behind you and for those who have already been through it but did not have the voice to express the scenario or the instance for which they were a part of. So in my case, it was Isabella. And the gentleman that we missed, it was Hillary and April and Joan. But all of us, if we are exposed to it, whether it's a Facebook post or in person, like, we can do our due diligence to expose the behavior of people who are operating in implicit bias, anger, racism, prejudice, against certain communities. All right, folks, I thank you so much for your support of this podcast. You can download and like and share this podcast on a variety of different platforms, including Anchor, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, and Stitcher. So help me get the word out. Please share. Please subscribe on your platform of choice. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to my podcast, and have a blessed day.